Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "There's a fight that's going on inside me. And this is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, full of arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, it lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf," he continues, "the other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, full of humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Now this same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." And the grandson sat and thought about it for a minute. He looked up, he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah. Lord, it's so hard living this life, a constant struggle each and every day. Some wonder why I'd rather die than to continue living this way. Many are blind and cannot find the truth, 'cause no one seems to really know. But I won't accept that this is how it's gonna be. Therefore, you got to let me and my people go. 'Cause I wanna be free, completely free. Lord, won't you please come and save me?
Wake up, goddammit!
All right. Good evening, good afternoon, or good night.
You've got to be seen green to show that you're stuck.
It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, K-Tal. Oki, namaste, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Holding down the other half of our hosting duties, some call them up, others call them the Lions Historian. If you got something else you want to call them, besides those two things and my best friend, my dad, Bill Green, keep it to yourself. What's happening, Daddy? How you doing tonight, man?
Well, still too early to tell.
Amen.
First line of business is, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Okay, good. First line of business.
All right. Hey, all right.
Technical issues are what they are. It's It's a strange time, but I think it seems like I say that a lot before these shows, during the beginning of these shows. So,
yeah,
you know, same stuff, different night, you know. But anyway, to be a little bit more emphatic, you know, the things are, you know, it's all good. Nobody said it's always pleasant. So, that's kind of where it is, you know, but it's all good. Good
yeah.
to see. It's good to see your dude. You call him Primo. Never have figured out what that means, Adam, in the chat room.
Yeah, Primo is like, you know, like a cousin.
Okay.
It can be right. It can be used in other contexts, but the easiest way is just like, you know, cousin.
Okay, that's why you call Ray Primo too. Okay, I got it.
Exactly.
All right, cool.
I don't call JP Primo. You know, so
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, all in all, by and by, as things begin to even out, you know, on the cable news show issues that go back and forth. The themes of what's going on, man, you know, regardless of what the news wants to promote, you know, the things of what's going on are the things that have been going on, you know, and there's nothing politically that would indicate that these themes, themes, are going to change anytime soon. I know people like say, oh, well, you know, we're making progress, and, you know, baby steps, we're making progress. Well, okay, I guess that's true in some form, but, you know, that's kind of what I want to talk about. But I'm not going to do it now because I'm going to let you finish your due diligence, my man. Step out the way.
Right on. Well, before we go ahead and jump into everything, as always, on our live shows, Mondays and Wednesdays, if you catch the recorded show, it's all good. You're going to do the same thing. There's a couple of reminders here we just like to pass down. The first thing is that you grab a pen and paper, pencil and pad, a post-it note, a marker, the back of an envelope, a napkin, either side of the napkin, wink, wink, Adam. Either side will do. We just want to make sure that you've got something to write with. If you got any questions or comments, that you don't forget anything. If you have something you might want to share with us. Or, hey, you might even pick up something from me and Dad's discussion, you know. So we want to make sure you don't miss anything and that you write it down. The second thing, we like to remind everyone on our live shows that we have different ways that you, the listeners, can engage with us. This is Blog Talk Radio, so talk radio. You can give us a call or you can chat with us. You can call in. I'm sure you've got the pen and paper handy by now. Our number here is 516-456-0094. Again, 516-453-6094. And when you want to comment or ask a question or just give a nice warm shout out to me and my father, you can just press 1 on the keypad, and that'll put your number in the queue, and it will bring you in as soon as we can. Another way you can engage with us, as I mentioned, is the chat room on the Blog Talk Radio site, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhousefx, the letter F and the letter X all together. With your free Blog Talk Radio profile or account, you can just go ahead and go in the chat room. You'll see at the bottom of the screen once you get to our live episode, and you can chat with us directly. As always, Adams is holding it down in the chat room. And finally, you can also engage with us on the ever-beloved Facebook page as well. We have an event page that you may have received an invitation. You can chat with us in the discussion tab there as well. So there you have it. Just a brief reminder from your friends at the Greenhouse Radio Show, Will and Bill.
Right on. Beautiful job, man. I always love the way you do it. It's just so smooth, man. It's smooth as goose poop.
Man, I try so hard sometimes not to have those sayings you used to say when I was younger. And it's amazing how those, you know, phrases come out, smooth like goose poop or sharp like a you know what that's pointed on board both ends, you know. It's just some kind of
What do you mean, rat turd?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I wasn't going to say
God, he ain't going to say it. Yeah, you know, that ain't cussing.
He said, he's sharper than a rat turd on both ends. You'd be like, what? What? Okay, I mean, yeah, all right. I guess it's a compliment.
Yeah, pointed on both ends.
Pointed on both ends, man. That's
funny, man. That's funny. Yeah, man, so, you know, what's up with you? How you doing, man?
I'm good. I don't know. It's like every time you ask me that, I get, like, caught in the moment, like in headlights for a minute. I guess because I really have to self-diagnose or take a moment to look within myself. I don't know. Because, you know, when that lady comes on, Long Talk Radio, you know, I'm in the zone. So when you ask me, I don't know, it's weird. It's like, I'm cool. I'm good. You saw my question, my social media question earlier about, I forgot now what I posted. Oh, living in the present and not allow yourself to be hunted by your past. That was just a little reflection from Monday. I think I had mentioned something about that in Monday's show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm better.
You did.
I'm good. You know, I'm good. And it's just a very interesting thing of just being older, going through life, thinking about your experiences, you know, your failures, your success, your relationships, your all these different things, you know, that we've gone through in life, whoever you are, whatever it is. You know, I've just been so caught up in reflection a lot lately. And it's even those moments where I'm not even expecting it to happen. Like I can just get caught up in just a feeling or a memory or something like that. But I think there's a reason for it just because I'm letting go of things from the past. And I think this is just a part of the process, you know. And so sometimes it's like I don't really know how I'm doing because this is a new kind of feeling. You know, it's a different kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess all in all, that's good, you know, to be able to acknowledge it and to admit it, you know, even right now, just saying it, I'm getting like little goosebumps on my arm. So we all good.
Yeah, as long as they're goosebumps. Sorry.
As opposed to what?
Do shit.
Amen. Let me cue up the music now.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it can be. I won't say it is. Well, for me it is, but I won't say it is for everybody. So it can be a difficult thing, you know, to wrestle with the past, come to grips with the past. But also, I think it's important not to assume that letting go of the past is going to provide amnesia. That never happens. You know, it's going to still be there. It's just how will it show up the next time around. And if things are done with it, then it will be reflective on how it shows up the next time around. And memories move, you know, they shift. You know, they're very deft at redefining themselves, where you may think, you know, that you worked through something only to have it come back in another form. You know, it's hard to deal with the past singularly. I think almost all of us, our pasts are intermingled with other people, other events, other places, other things. So even though I may have, like, let's say for an example, I may have put my past to rest in regards to my behavior at bars, still, even though I'm not drinking, I can walk into a bar and be flooded by memories, drinking memories, even though I'm not drinking, you know. And, of course, people will say, well, they don't go in bars, but that's not the point. You know, the bar can show up at a party here at home where people are drinking. You know, I'm going to chase everybody out the crib when it ain't even my crib. You know, so, you know, I mean, so these themes can, and or witnessing someone else's behavior under the influence and having, you know, over-identified with those, with that kind of behavior and seeing myself in that behavior. You know, so memories can be kind of tricky, you know, or let's say a memory about a relationship, which you might be able to relate to, you know, having put it behind you only to have it show up again, you know, and a lot of times, time doesn't really help to reframe the past. Sometimes the past shows up in the present, and it's a reminder of why you wanted to let go of that past to begin with. So, you know, it's a tricky thing, you know. And I know people always want to make these positive affirmations. Yeah, just let go. Hey, yeah. It's like somebody saying, you know, well, why are you depressed? Just get over it. Oh, I see why you're depressed. You're an Aries. Aries have a harder time with depression. You know what I mean? Like, oh, okay, why didn't I think of that? I'm fine now. Yeah, well, it don't quite work that way. So, but the odd thing for me is my good memories don't have as much influence on me as my bad memory, you know, or my less than pleasant memories. You know, like I'll lump all the bad into one category, like my drinking past. I'm going to lump it all into one bad category and forget all the good times that we had. You know, so it's a tricky thing dealing with the past. I think what's most important for me is using my past as an indicator of how far I've come, you know, as opposed to looking at it as still being trapped.
Absolutely.
You know, that doesn't mean that right away, you know, it's, oh, okay, I'm fine now. No, but it means the process shifts. Okay, well, okay, here we go again, Bill. Let's do it incrementally. Let's go through the steps here. Okay, in 1972, that's right, you sure did do that. You know, what have you done? What have you done for the last 50 years, you know, to address that issue? You know, so. You know, it's like, all right, you got to go through the steps, you know, because you're just not going to let go of what you did 50 years ago. And going through the steps sometimes reveals, wait a minute, what about in 82? What about, you know, I do this a lot when it comes to you, you know, how my past, how my negative past haunts me with regards to you. And it's like, okay, yeah, well, do you remember, though? Yeah, you did that. Yeah, that happened in 72. Yeah, you sure did. But do you remember the summer you spent together in 84, I'm sorry, 82, you know, do you remember, you know, the summer spent in Waukegan, you know, when it was just you and him and it was just you two, you know, rebonding? Or do you just want to discount that? Is it, it don't count because it feels good? Oh, okay, I get it. You just want to beat up on yourself. All right, well, why'd you just tell us that? Well, just told us. You know, just beat up on yourself then.
Go on, man.
And when you're tired, when you get tired of it, you know, just remember, when you get tired of it, the good memories are still there. But good memories don't have that influence. So I feel you, man.
Yeah.
You know, that personal narrative, you know, can be rather wearing on the nerves. No question about it.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes when it's funny you said, 1972, sometimes those memories come back to me and it's like a Morgan Freeman. The year was 1993.
You know? Yeah, like, man. Oh, yeah. It's nothing like having somebody else do your past for you in a narrative, right? I can hear that voice. Yeah, right on. Right on. Like I was thinking, if I wanted to have a voice, it would be, don't ask me why, you know, but for some reason, Kevin Spacey. Not George Clooney.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's like for some reason, not Morgan Freeman, you know, not Denzel, but for some reason, you know, like Kevin Spacey, man. It's like I could hear him doing my narrative for me, man. It's trippy, I know. Anyway,
No. I agree. I like his voice as a narrative.
Yeah, man. So, man. You know, but in the meantime, there's plenty of things that happen to us in the present that will reconnect us to our past, guaranteed. it's a crazy time, man. It's a crazy time, man. As you get older, you know, the memories grow, you know, but also as you get older, you know, there's more opportunity to redefine accomplishments as well. Sometimes what is seen as a failure 50 years ago may be seen as an accomplishment 50 years later. You know, it's just that we didn't have 50 years later to use 50 years ago. You know, so there it is. It's like, yeah, in spite of all them other things, yeah, they sure did happen. But, you know, almost 41 years attest to the fact that in spite of all that, you didn't drink over it. You know, can you handle that bill? You know, after all that other stuff is said, can you handle the biggest changes that you didn't drink over? Amen. All right. So there I go, right? 20 minutes into the show, we ain't talking about the show. It's your fault.
Yeah, we are. We're talking about the show. This is the Greenhouse
Effect.
Yeah. This is where
right.
Will and Bill, you know, engage and bridge the gaps of the generations, man. And so this is a 50-year-old black man speaking to, you know, an elder.
A 75-year-old Negro. Negro. High yellow Negro.
Black man and a 75-year-old yellow Negro. There
high
you go.
Yellow Negro.
You know, I mean.
That's what I call bridging the gap. Right on. Man, you know, I mean, just some things don't change. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, if I may, before we really jump into the, as they say, the skinny.
If we do, right. Yeah.
I just wanted to acknowledge a couple of things. Tomorrow, May 19th, is a couple of people who I admire and stuff, one of which is my mom. My mom's birthday, so...
There it is.
Thank you, Belinda Davis. Belinda Davis Green, thank you for, you know, giving birth to me, hooking up with my dad and putting up with both our crazy asses. So, you know, thank you.
Yeah, amen, man.
And the other person is, some know him as Malcolm Little, some know him as El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, and mostly everybody knows him as Malcolm X. Birthday is tomorrow. And we, you know, we're talking about just thinking about what you and I were just discussing and looking at our past and some of those failures a few years later is looked as triumph. You know, I was just briefly flooded with just a couple of things and reflecting of Malcolm X's birthday. And you think about his time span and some of his, you know, what some of us would see as failures and ended up being success and the challenges he went through, his challenges being a lighter complexion black man, you know, let alone just being a black man in America and all these things that he went through to end up unfortunately being assassinated in February, but February 21st, 1965. But you know, I just think about just what he went through, you know, being a hustler and then being in the Nation of Islam and then forming his own ideology and his own organization based on not hate, you know, not separation, you know, but a love for human beings, period. I was doing a quick Google search because I always enjoy sometimes just doing a Google search and see what Google says. And Google was saying, what was Malcolm's greatest achievement? And it had, you know, that was the question or something like that. It's like a highlight or a link or whatever that you click.
Mm-hmm.
And it was,
yeah.
And it was like, you know, and identified him as being a spokesperson for the Nation of Islam, you know, leading the mosque number seven and being the second most powerful person, if you will, to the nation, you know, just of his his role. But, you know, I feel like his, to me, you know, in my own opinion, I just feel like his greatest accomplishment was actually breaking away from the nation, you know, identifying, I think you use the word fraud and some of those beliefs, but it just seemed like it was his achievement to me of identifying again more of a worldly fight for not just civil rights but human rights, and it wasn't really about just hate and segregating I mean, of course, those issues still existed in America. It's not he was dismissing it, but it just seemed like there was it began to be more than just black and white.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to just to throw my little reflection of Malcolm, you know, before we got going and whatnot, and acknowledge again my mom most importantly, and Malcolm's birthday as well.
Mm-hmm. Amen. You know, and that to me is a testimony to distorted history of a people to acknowledge individuals, I think is the responsibility of, in this case, black people, you know, or American black people. Because until lions have historians, hunters will always be heroes. And if you don't know who you are, anybody can name you. And a million other cliches, but I'm not going to get into it. So right on. But I want to, I want to give equal opportunity to your mom, you know, because, we talk about those that stand in the limelight or the spotlight,
yeah,
as if they're the only ones that exist, you know. But, a spotlight still shines on your mom, but definitely when I got to know her, you know, a teacher of, you know, African American history, and at that time, you know, a charter high school, Kenwood Academy, you know, that was coming into its own when this 21-year-old was teaching there, and her big fro and is it called dashiki for what women wear, or is it another name?
Let's just call it a dashiki.
Yeah, you know, the full length, not the waist length. You know, that dudes was wearing, you know, and, it's, to me, you know, a marvel to acknowledge. And then watching how her career continued to advance in other places she went. And I remember when she was teaching at Harper, and she was in charge of the cheerleaders, and they would even come by the crib, you know, man. I ran into young ladies who had her classes at Kenwood, I mean, as a grown man, and they remembered me, you know, being married to her at the time, and how special it was for them to have me show up in the classroom, not knowing that I was full of, you know, envy and jealousy and all that, you know, seeing your ma do what I only dreamed to do, you know. And, and working at the New Inglewood Academy. You know, and I wandered over there one day, I think I was very much entrenched in my madness, but wandered over there and doggone ran into a teacher who was still there from when I was there. She looked at me and said, "Damn, you're still here?" But y'all got to understand, you know, it took me 5.5 years to get out of high school. So for her to say that to me, I mean, it wasn't embarrassment. It brought us. It was a great laugh, you know. I'm a grown man in my late 20s, you know, maybe my early 30s. And you said, "Damn, you're still here." Yeah, I was 19, y'all. So before you start trying to add it up, you got to be lying. You know, I was 19 when I got it. I used to wander the halls. You know, everybody needed a hall pass. I didn't. I was like the honorary student. People thought I was a teacher aide. You know, nobody questioned me about it. I just, you know, anyway. What a time. But there's an example of what you were talking about earlier. Now, I can beat myself up about that past, but I think I don't because of how much I processed it, talked about it, faced it, and dealt with it, and accepted, Yeah, but what a great disappointment I must have been to my mother, you know, and that's the hard side of it, you know, and it's still there, but it doesn't ring as sharply as the work since then that I've done on myself. So I think that's the key, man, you know, not just feeling the pains of the distorted past, but weighing in with, you know, the progress since then. And contrary to what you might be feeling right now at this very moment, hopefully you're not, but in the event that you are feeling right now at this very moment, is as the past is kind of nipping at, you know, at your ankles, you know, I hope you realize how much you have accomplished And, you know, that's the other thing. Don't look at accomplishments. I'm not saying this to you. I'm just saying this in general. Don't look at accomplishments trying to find a flaw, you know, because that's something else that, you know, it's like, yeah, I was Will's father and all that, you know. And, you know, stop there, man. You're sad. but, you know, there was a time when it was either buy half a pint or buy him a hamburger. It's like, man, you know. See, so anyway, you know, it's trippy, man. But, you know, I got inspired, if I may, just real quick, when you were talking about Malcolm and, you know, reflecting on your mom and thinking about me and you in the end term. It's something I wrote that's in the book, Dysfunctional by Design. And it's titled, if I may, do you mind if I do this? It only take about 2 minutes.
No, go for it.
It's called Waiting for Enlightenment, and it simply says, waiting for enlightenment. What is this thing that I am sure I know, but do not know how to teach? Enlightenment. It sings its notes from the innermost regions of my vulnerable heart, and yet the words continue to elude me. Waiting for enlightenment. The universe taught it to me long before the journey to Earth began, and now I have arrived, waiting for enlightenment. The journey home is paved with enlightening episodes of my human experience, but my spiritual essence will only be realized when the journey home is completed, waiting for enlightenment. It is the wait of a lifetime, and nothing can be more difficult than waiting a lifetime for what one already has. Amen. So, it's a curious thing, you know, this thing called life. We know what we know, and we learned it before we got here, and the experience is why we're here, you know, to complete the journey here. And yet, so often, I'll get caught into this maelstrom of a vicious cycle, you know, that denies the very value of my existence. It's a funny thing, man. So it's just take a moment to be easy on yourself. As far as I'm concerned, dude, you're my hero. That's for sure.
Oh, man. Crazy coincidence, or I don't know. There's not a lot of this. There's no such thing as coincidence. And a Facebook memory, and you mentioned enlightenment. As soon as you said enlightenment, I'm like, oh, I saw this in my memory. 6 years ago, you posted, waiting for enlightenment is no simple or easy task, for nothing is harder to look for when it is something someone already has. And you said, just look the other way, inward.
I think I wrote that about 5 or 6 years ago.
Right. 6 years ago,
just as a reflection off of a moment of, you know, dealing with processing the book. Yeah, man. You know, and not just processing the book, processing myself. I mean, we're all in pursuit of enlightenment, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not. It's just that a lot of times we call it other things. Guilt, shame. You know, thrill, you know, climax, orgasm, call a lot of other things. Okay.
Interesting. Well, not really. I think you're speaking 100%, you know. And this was a year after Armine graduated from Morehouse.
So
there's no telling what kind of enlightenment, reflection, whatever you were having at that moment.
Man. At his graduation, I mean, I went all the way tripping, and you did a great job taking pictures, man. And I love the fact that people thought you were like this professional photographer from some neighborhood magazine or newspaper. I loved it. It's his son. Wow. What newspaper does he work for? I said the Atlanta Journal. I don't even know there was an Atlanta Journal.
That's the big one. That's like the Sun-Times and the Tribune put together, man.
But man, that whole drum ceremony, it was like, I got to come here. I made up my mind I was gonna register for Morehouse. What an experience.
Wow. That was a good time.
Yeah, yeah, it was powerful. I had one good hip, one bad hip. You know, it's a good thing I wasn't walking in circles. I had the bad hip surgery was waiting for me, you know, when I got back. But the good hip, man, dude banged it out for me so I'd be able to walk the ground, because that was a huge place to walk on with a bad hip, you know. Man. Yeah, that was quite something. It really was amazing. All right, so Monday, are we ready to shift back into reality? We want to stay out here a little longer.
Well, what's up? What you got? Monday, what happened Monday?
Well, Monday, you know, among the other things we were talking about, you know, I had mentioned the American narrative. Mm-hmm. And I was inspired to dig a little deeper. I love the fact that you brought up Google. Fired to dig a little deeper because, as I said, Monday, I'm that dude who sit in a congregation, sit in a classroom, sit in any kind of gathering, and where there's an orator, preacher, teacher, whatever the case may be, and they may be talking about something that is kind of over my head, but I'm looking around, scanning the room, and everybody's like nodding their heads up and down like, yeah. And I'm thinking, I don't know what the hell they talking about, but I'm going to nod my head up and down just like everybody else, you know. So, you know, I'm tired of doing that. So this word, the American narrative, you know, it's like, let me look this up because I don't know what that means. Sure, I could speculate, I could guess, but I'm not going to admit to somebody else I don't know what it is, you know. So I still don't know just by guessing. So in looking it up and looking up what somebody wrote about it, you know, and the question, you know, is there an American narrative, and what is it? You know, and then he just wrote, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing because the point of it for me was captured in one paragraph. You know, he said nearly four centuries of American history have witnessed the evolving conflict between two competing sets of values. One, a belief that acting on behalf of the common good should guide social and political behavior, and two, a belief that unfettered individual freedom should dominate political and social life. So, and then, you know, he went on to talk about Puritanism, American Revolution, the Civil War, the rise of industrialism, the Progressive Era, and the New Deal, the Great Society, and the conservative revival brought through the Nixon-Reagan era. So, you know, in looking at that and now having a sense of the American narrative, then I, you know, then suddenly it helped me get a little better grasp on the environment and the atmosphere of the politics of the day. As you know, they just had some Republican primaries in some key states for, you know, key political positions. Don't need [S2] Right. [S1] To go into all the positions, all the people and all that. It's enough said that that's what the, you know, what the atmosphere of the environment politically is right now, and it's supercharged because we're still dealing with the supreme idiocy of the Trump era, the Trump regime, and the re-Trumplican attitudes, you know, that are prevalent in today's political arena. So when I looked at what my man Dennis Donahue had to say about that first one, a belief that acting on behalf of the common good should guide social and political behavior. Another word that has been bantered about that I pretended to know what it meant and hope nobody would ask me to tell them is populist. You know, what the hell is a populist? You know, and there's one person who was running for a particular seat in Congress, I believe, you know, and running on a populist platform. So, okay, let me find out what this is, because is that just another word for Re-Trumplican? So, bless Google, right? You know, and it's a member of a political party claiming to represent the common people. So we're going back to this first definition, you know, found in the American narrative, you know.
Right.
And then number two, right, a belief that unfettered individual freedom should dominate political and social life. Well, now, you know, I'm asking myself the question. It is also prevalent in today's political arena. You know, is government an instrument for good, or is it everyone for themselves? You know, and it's like this is the So it's almost like a clash between a populist approach or a questioning of the real impact and intent of government. You know, and it's like, man, so, and with all the other sub-issues going on, like it's not just the dude, you know, murdering 10, 11, I don't know if the number is still going up, people in a supermarket, but what is the, you know, prevailing atmosphere in our society that allows someone to grow up? He wasn't born 18, you know, so for 18 years, this was developing, you know, and right under the nose of those that had some impact or influence in his life. So either they all were for it, they were all against it, or they all were in denial about it, you know. But you got to choose one of them, you know, to speak your case, you know. And to me, it's just an amazing thing when it's looked at from the perspective of government, you know, and how government can supercharge attitudes at the drop of a hat of individuals that are just seeking to understand what their purpose on earth is. And it's almost like the light went on for my man at some point, what, 16 or whatever. Suddenly purpose was revealed. But all around him had, I guess, their own ideas about what they wanted him to be or what they hoped he would become, or were willing to just kind of give him time. Hey, he's young, you know, he'll learn, you know, and just kind of step aside, which in that kind of denial still just adds fuel to the fire, because there's nothing, I don't think, more difficult for an individual to go through life feeling unnoticed. You know, I think that is, you know, that is a festering ground, you know, for, you know, an inferiority complex to emerge. And who knows, you know, what an individual would do, you know, to be seen, to be recognized. So anyway, reading about this, thinking about this, and taking a look at this, you know, led me to question other aspects of, like, the four big themes of the Great Society, you know, that that Johnson was really about, Lyndon Baines, LBJ, you know, the president who called black folks niggers. But he did it in good spirit. Yeah. You know, because everybody accepted the good spirit of his intention, you know, and they didn't want to see it in some negative. But, you know, just the whole process of, you know, wanting to protect social welfare, promote fairness, control big business, and, you know, uphold moral values, somewhat, you know, consistent with so many other themes of American society, like, you know, like the conservative revival. That was pretty much what it was about as well. So all that led me to taking a look at, and it was just a term that came into my head, man, you know, the politics of racism. You know, I mean, and doggone Google, right? I just Googled this. Let me see if there's a such thing. What can I find? Hey, it was all kind of stuff that jumped off the page, the politics of racism. So rather than just deal with that as a singular event, I thought, well, it's a good time to dissect politics, because that's a word that I really have a somewhat of an inherent understanding of, but I don't have a clear definition of politics. Did you want to jump in there, man? Did you want to say something?
No, I'm good. I'm curious as how this your rabbit hole goes. I'm good.
Well, you know, I figure, okay, racism as it stands is something that everybody has an idea about, but the politics of racism, it has to have some components. And doggone, I think, you know, it's like, well, let's get to the politics and then maybe we can see the racism. So I found 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 aspects of politics. The first, political, you know, relating to the government or the public affairs of a country, or relating to the principles of that country. The interests of status within a political party or organization, rather than I can't even read my own writing. But okay, but I could just stop right there. Relating to the government or the public affairs of a country, or relating to the interests of states within a political party organization. Okay. Political science, the study of politics. Remember now we're talking about political relating to government. So, you know, because, you know, I don't like using a word to define the word. Well, it's important to remember the idea of politics. So political science is a study of politics dealing with systems of governance and power and the analysis of political activities, thoughts, behaviors, and constitutional law. I don't know if you had political science in high school. I did. I don't remember a damn thing. You know, so I don't know if that's reflective of the teacher or the student, but all I know is that I know I was in a political science class and it was reading this. I said, that ain't what I learned. Political party, an organization that coordinates candidates to compete in a particular country's election. Political economy, the study of economy on a national level and its relations with laws, institutions, and government. And, of course, somebody might say, okay, well, what's economy? Well, it's the wealth and resources of a country. All right. Mm-hmm. Political math. So we're talking about political, the politics of a thing, what this political influence is, political science, study of political party, political economy. Political map is designed to show the lines that divide a nation, state, country, or city. It's designed to show the lines that divide a nation, state, country, or city from another. Which to me is interesting, you know, because in this idea of a political map and its theme about dividing a nation, a state, or a country, and so forth, my question is what we've talked about for the last month. You know, what is the nation of white? Or what is the nation of Negro? You know, so it's like this is a part of our nation as it's called, but how does it show up on a national level? Okay. Then moving on to the next one, political system, a form of government where the members of a social organization are in power, the legal, economic, and cultural, and other social systems. So let me read it again. A form of government where the members of a social organization are in power, the legal, economic, cultural, and other social systems. That's what they're empowered with doing. And then political factors. So we talked about political science, political party, political economy, political map, political systems. And now we get to what all that means when it comes to political factors. Our activities having to do with government policy and its administration that has the potential to change or influence a business. And it's like, wait a minute. That's it? Think about political economy. You think about political science, you think about the map and the system, the great political factor, activities having to do with government policy and its administration that has the potential to change or influence a business. Now, it also has some other parts, too, the economic environment, the social-cultural environment, and the emergence of new technologies as well as the acceptance of the new technologies. And somebody might say, well, what the hell? You remember when there was big, giant TV tubes not too long ago in every TV, and then almost overnight they were outlawed, it seemed, because, you know, suddenly, you know, you had to buy these thin things and you had to get these adapters. You could keep your old TV, but you wasn't going to get a picture. And then you weren't going to have a place to take to get it repaired. And it's like, you know, that was like government just decided to do that. And government also decided to come out with these new light bulbs. These things weren't optional. You know, they became requirements to conserve energy, so forth and so on. So, you know, new technologies has had a tremendous influence on the shifting of the tide of business. You know, like we went from, what, 8-tracks to cassette players to betas to VCRs to
What do we have now? Just these, you know, jump forward. You could do all that with a cell phone. You know, and I think about computers. It's in the 1960s, just in the 1960s, a computer, there's a movie called Apollo 13. And in the movie, the Tom Hanks character is taking people on a tour of NASA. And he's talking about computers. And a computer filled up a whole room, one computer, you know, filled up a whole room. And he was telling the people, one day, our scientists are saying that there'll be a computer that will be able to fit on your lap. And this is just the 1960s. It's hard to believe that those things didn't exist then, you know. So, yes, you know, like government has a lot to do with the influence of technology and, you know, whether the acceptance of the new technologies is going to be, you know, the change that people will have no vote on once they've given some impact of approval. Like, I think people just accepted the idea of buying a flat screen TV because there were no more options available. So like, well, I got to have my TV. So, you know, of course, if the prices were high, they were jacked, and then in a year they dropped down to nothing to where now, you know, yeah, you can buy a TV for the cost of a laptop. Right. Anyway, so to me, the politics of racism, you know, definitely racism has an influence on the political system, on the political scheme, right, relating to the government or the public affairs of a country. It has to do with political science, a study of politics dealing with systems of governance and power, and the analysis of political activities. Has something, politics of racism influences political parties, organizations that coordinate candidates to compete in a particular country's election. It, you know, politics, the politics of racism definitely impacts political economy, the study of economy on a national level, the political map. Oh my God, do we even need to talk about how, you know, within the inner cities, especially how maps are cut up, redesigned, and divided to, you know, influence the direction of votes, you know, the political system in itself, you know, the politics of racism help a form of government where members of a social organization are in power, you know, through the legal, economic, cultural, and other social systems. Political factors in the end, you know, are activities having to do with government policy and its administration that has the potential to change or influence a business. You know, so if we began to dissect on a broader scale, which of course we don't do, you know, black folks, you know, we don't do this. We don't look on a broader scale of politics. We just take the one word and just ball it up in a nice little neat package and then lay it on the side while we watch basketball. You know, these themes are the very things that have permeated that 4 years that Trump was in power that he did not create. He borrowed from previous regimes and put together a package that is influence of the direction of the vote today. And I still believe, and nothing has convinced me to think otherwise, that it is a direct result of having 8 years of Obama, and America has yet to recover from that. Well, so there it is, man. That's just what I wanted to talk about tonight.
Awesome. I'm going to check that out and look that up myself. And so you breaking down that seven came from looking at the root of
the politics of racism. Yeah.
The politics of racism. Really just curious comparing political economy versus political factors. But I guess when you throw in technology, I can see how that can separate the two. That's cool. I'm, you know, very curious about that. And I'm with you, man. I didn't know what the heck populist was. I was just nodding my head like, okay, populist. Got you. I didn't know. So, yeah, thank you for that. Adam jumped in and asked a question. Could you apply the same theory to gas versus electric cars? I'm assuming he means like the television.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hell yeah. You know, yeah, I remember when his dad had a what they call that, a prism. What was the name of that car?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the prism, not prism, Prius.
Prius.
You know, his dad had the first Prius I ever seen. Never heard of a Prius. You know, riding around in this Prius, man, this had to be, damn, I don't know, 20 years ago maybe? I don't even know. All I know is I was riding around in this thing, and we came to a stoplight, and it sounded like it shut off. And he was just sitting there like he was waiting for me to say something. And I'm like, all right. And he just started laughing. Yeah, that's just what these things do. You know, and it's like, damn. You know, and it was like, I thought it was just kind of a trinket. I thought it was not a sign of things to come. But then I didn't understand economy from that perspective of how, again, taking a look at political factors as they impact political economy and in relation to the potential change or influence of a business. You know, and we're dealing with, now think about that. Think about 2015, however long ago it was that Art had the, think about if government had been about the business of doing with gas automobiles what it did with giant tube TVs, you know, and as Obama came in and rebuilt the economy, especially in the car factories, what if he had shifted the direction to do nothing but promote, create, you know, and develop, you know, electric rides, you know, where we would be today if gas rides had been phased out, you know. Of course, now we're talking about the politics of economy and factors that would tie into that within a political system, you know, and you see how these things intertwine, man, and speed bounce off one or another and seeks its own balance and dictating to the people the direction we're going to go. This thing we're into right now with this affront about the cost of gas, you know, wouldn't even be an issue if, in fact, electric rides had been developed. We don't even know what the impact of having electric rides would have had on the atmosphere.
Right.
You know, who knows as far as – but there's this – You're a conspiracy theorist. There's a global conspiracy that continues to revolve economically around this need for oil. Man, it's like the world is addicted to oil. But yet there's elements that indicate, well, the biggest consumer of oil, you know, as it's refined, is to create gas to run rides. Well, you know, what if globally, the world said, no, we're going to eliminate gas rides. You know, there's this influence of business, you know, that dictates, because I really believe a lot of people are making a lot of money off the rise in gas prices because there's not a gas shortage.
It
goes up a lot faster than it goes down. You know, so, you know, it's like, okay, when they get enough, when they've satisfied their greed and they've rebuilt their coffers, I'm pretty sure we'll see, you know, gas prices just start dropping right away, you know. And, you know, so, yeah, that absolutely, I believe that, Adam. You know, that's a real good example. Right on, my man. You know, and, you know, if you just look at it from a business perspective of a political factor in regards to, you know, just the cosmic economy that we all live in, it's not even too hard to take a look at other factors that have such a tremendous influence on the direction of our country, whether we know it or not, you know, whether we like it or not, you know, in so many areas, you know, like guns. You know, I mean, how long is the debate about guns going to continue to go on before somebody just says it's just too big of a business for people to be able to shut down, you know? And if people wanted to shut it down, people would have. If the issues of gun violence was an issue to shut it down, it would have been done, you know? But obviously that's not the problem. The love for guns is greater, you know, than the grief of loss of life, you know? And that is a business, you know, that has lobbyists, meaning people that speak up for them in government. You know, it has its own platform, the NRA, you know, I remember hearing somebody say, look, if you want to change, you know, the focus of the NRA, just become a member of it and then vote against all the things that they vote for. Build up a big enough, you know, number to where you override, you know, the rest of the, you know, NRAs. But we don't think like that politically, and that's really too bad.
No, that's
you know,
we
don't think
react.
About.
That's
yeah.
what you say. We
and
just
and that's where the race, that to me, Will, thank you, because that's my whole point. That's the politics of racism. You know, the people who dictate social policy and the people who only get the option of reacting to it. You know, and that is the purpose of racism in this country. That's the whole idea behind census and color differentiation. You know, and I still rest on the idea that you want to begin to eliminate that, call everybody an American, and throw out that theme of minority altogether. Just eliminate it, you know, which government could do overnight. And while you're at it, let's take another look at reparations. Let's give some of this money back to your people that you're sending over $40 billion. Hey, man, that's a nice start toward reparations right here in this country. Amen. And start offering it in the most socioeconomically impoverished black community. Don't just randomly put it out there. No. Let's start, you know, let's start with the socioeconomically impoverished black communities. Let's start with reparations right there. And let's build out from there. Let's establish black banks once again in the black community and establish what the purpose of black banks was supposed to be, or banks in the black community, where they had officers designed to teach people economics, to help people learn how to spend better, to keep money in the community. Yeah, let's start right there. You know, and while we're at it, hell, why stop there? You know, let's get a commitment from black athletes. Okay, I'll stop.
Like, whoa.
Yeah.
But that's yeah. a good, I think that's a good starting point. I was just writing down the question, you know, how do we dictate? How do we start to dictate the policy instead of reacting or understanding the difference? Because I think a lot of us think that our reaction will construct, you know, some kind of dictation towards the policy. But I think that we don't really understand that, you know. Like,
no, well, let's take a look at, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, like, when the world was on fire a couple of years ago after George Floyd, and I think we expected that through our reaction that suddenly there was going to be such a change in policy. But really it's not, because cats are still getting killed. You know, I mean, you know, still getting, as you like to say, mowed down. You know, there hasn't been a lot of changes, if anything. I mean, cats are still walking away free. So, anyway, I'm just saying, I'm just again.
Well, let's broaden the scope of what you just said. All that's absolutely true. But let's take a look at the difference of dictating social policy as opposed to reacting to it. Like you said, the world was set on fire. You know, the world. Absolutely, you know, just responded, you know, to the I don't even know what adjectives I want to use, to this murder of this individual, you know, in this country. The world just rose up in arms, on fire, reacted to it. But then eventually the world has to step aside while the immediate global community has to then take the bull by the horns. Well, reactive people only have policy to give them existence. Reactive people don't dictate. They react too. So if the politics of change so dictates the stagnant approach toward fairness, then what happens? The focus shifts. So you had Black Lives Matter. Yeah, okay, so what? So does white lives. So does blue lives. You know, we're not going to even pretend that the point you're making has to do with George Floyd. You know, our policies so dictate that this is a fairness toward all, not just toward black people. Where you're missing the point. No, I'm not missing the point, because I'm the one who writes social policy. And you're missing the point by thinking that you can intimidate me by changing what social policy dictates. So maybe you had a chance until you said defund the police. Now, all that did was scare the bejesus out of scared white people. So, you know, not, now you want to defund the police, so who's going to protect us from you crazy Negroes? You know, it's like that's not what it meant, but that's sure what it sounded like to me. You know, so see, now all of a sudden, now we're reacting to policies and the issues that set the world on fire is pushed further and further. You know, see, and this is the thing that unless the collective minds of politicians of color, you know, who dictate, who write out laws, unless they, you know, collectively come to understand the importance of dictating policy as opposed to reacting to, you know, the ones that already exist, we're going to continue to have the imbalances that just go back and forth, ping pong ball, you know, like we have in the Supreme Court right now. 50 years ago, 5-4 vote, Roe versus Wade done. 50 years later, 5-4. Roe versus Wade, throw it out. You know, so it's, again, the dictates of social policy, not the reactions to it. The reactions to it didn't keep Trump from getting into power. It didn't keep him from saying he was going to put people in the Supreme Court that's supposed to be a non-political branch of government to be sure that they eliminate, you know, abortion. And nobody has still helped me to understand, why are Republicans so hung up on this issue of abortion anyway? You know, but it's not just that. It's the dictates of social policy, because there's more to it than just abortion. That's the drug that puts people to sleep. Just throw that one word out there, you know. And that's a crazy word when you think about it, because in so many ways, there's so many black folks who are not Republican, who are not Trumplicans, who have, you know, their own issues with the theme of abortion, like they have their own issues with the themes of homosexuality and so forth and so on. So, you know, it's like, how do we, as black Christians who have issues with homosexuality and abortion, how then do we compromise, you know, our beliefs to satisfy the need for change? Yeah, this is the great dodge that's eliminated if we just call everybody American. Now, see, we don't have any place to hide out. Now, this is just how we are as Americans. We're not going to divide it up by the politics of racism. You know, you can't be a racist to yourself. You know.
Yeah, you can't.
All right,
do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the ultimate schizophrenia.
Well. Yeah.
You know, I hate you. I hate you too. I hate you more.
I'm sure they'll make a movie about that, though. That sounds like a makes for an interesting movie. Hey, it's good to see Artie 49 in the chat room.
Hey, Artie.
It's been a while.
Right. Hey. Yeah, I hear you, Artie. I hope to see cultural reparations. Amen. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and down the historic black college universities to the degree that Harvard, Yale, U of C, yeah, yeah, amen. Amen, 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 amen. Right on, Artie. And that's a wonderful surprise. Glad we stayed on a little later.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
in the OT. Yeah. Yeah.
Good to see you.
All right.
Thanks for chiming in. Thank you so much. Good to see you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Wilfredo, I'm going to step out the way, man. You know. I see that Adam wants to say something.
Yeah,
let me bring him in right quick.
Yeah, just real quick. See
yeah, my man's been real patient. Right on. He deserves an acknowledgement.
I haven't heard from him.
Yeah, weeks of patience, yeah. Yeah. Man, the man was so ignored, he had to take a vacation to get over it.
I did. I have two questions / statements.
What's up, Primo? Let me get that in first. Go ahead.
So the first one is everybody's complaining about right now. Everybody is complaining about gas prices, and not everybody, but people are saying, well, it's Biden's fault, and Biden did this, and Biden did that, and gas. But how quickly people forget when we were after September 11th, and we were in war. We went to war with Iraq. the gas was still $4.25, $4.30, $4.40.
Not everybody, and because
wants
I was.
Nobody wants to acknowledge that and realize that right now, if you factor in inflation, gas is cheaper now than it was then. But everybody was complaining about the gas prices. And I remember there was on the Today Show when Matt Lauer was still on the Today Show, he had an executive from Mobil, and he's like, "You guys just declared three times the profits, but everybody's paying out the butt for gas. How do you justify it?" And he said, "Well,
I don't want to. Go ahead. Sorry.
We owe our stockholders."
Yeah. Well, I don't want to brag about us, but we did a whole couple shows on that whole thing about gas prices, you know. So, but yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, no. But it's everybody's blaming it now, but they don't think about, you know, years ago when it was just as expensive.
No.
Well, it depends on who you listen to. I remember, there I go, you know, back in the 70s when people were in gas lines to get gas, and chances are they were going to run out of gas before you got up there, you know, with your ride. You know, I remember not too long ago in the area you're talking about, Adam, when a carload of us drove from Chicago to Connecticut, you know, right in the midst of that time, man, you know, and then me and your cousin, Marty, drove back to Chicago. Will took the plane and all that. But, man, I you know, it was more expensive to drive than it was to fly.
Oh, yeah, it was. That's why I flew back.
Remember that? Yeah.
That's why I flew back.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, cousin Marty was a saving grace because I would have had to foot that bill all by myself. Baby. Yeah, Adam, so anyway, go ahead, man.
But
you know, I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Yeah, I think though that you know, Dad has used this word before, malaise. That there's still that malaise that as a whole that we fall into, especially when it comes to comparing something. We're talking 20 years ago now, so now we got to look back, you know, at that. And then of course we're not at war, so there's war as an excuse in around that time, or conflict, if you will. So, you know, it was an easier way out, or an easier way to justify, if you will. From my point of view, that's what I felt it was. And, you know, we look now, you know, and then we're looking now, of course, and, you know, as Dad mentioned, we talked about it before. We're like, well, why the heck is it so high? Because we shouldn't be affected by this conflict with Russia and Ukraine, you know. But at first, everybody's like, oh, well, it's because of this. But we had to kind of break out of that malaise, if you will, that same way out, that conflict is the reason why gas went up. But it's taken so long for us, you know, to realize, like, hey, no, there's something else afoot here. There's something that happening. But I'm just saying that it's just so easy for us to fall into that. But I think we're coming out of it now. So I don't think as many people, maybe at first, you know, a couple of months ago, maybe a lot of people forgot, but a lot of people are starting to come around now, you know.
But I think if I think people will blame, they'll blame, depending on what side you fall, people will blame a Democrat for high gas prices and not look back and say, oh, well, you know, we had high gas prices under Republican as well.
Yeah.
But it's Joe Biden's fault why the gas is so high.
Well, that's
that's
the political economy. You know, you know, we have to, this is what to me is so important that people need to understand, you know, like wherever you want to put the blame, you have to understand the system that even creates the finger that you're pointing with. You know, so understanding the politics of government is more than who's ever, you know, the president. You know, it has to do with how these different aspects and components of politics work one against or for the other. But I think it's all, I really do. I believe it's all under the guise of, you know, the politics of racism. You know, that racism is the influence of politics in America. So no matter where we look, I mean, look, you know, people are going to say whatever they say about, but I was sending $40 billion to Ukraine. Now, people are going to take whatever attitude they want to take about whether that's a good thing, a bad thing, or an indifferent thing. Fine. And that's usually what most people in America do.
You know, we want to hold on to our ideals of denial. So we want to continue to live under that umbrella and promote the idea of this, you know, unilateral attitude of democracy. But we're going to turn a blind eye inward every time. Whatever comes out of our mouth that promotes that, there's going to be an immediate attitude of denial, you know, that gives it strength. And I don't care in what form it takes, you know. Like if I look at a Charles Barkley and a Shaquille O'Neal and a Kenny the Jet, you know, whatever, I forgot his last name, you know, and I listen to those three brothers talk about anything political, my first thought is, but where are y'all going to be when the revolution breaks out? Are you going to be willing to give up all that money? You know,
nope.
I mean, so, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know. You know, only they know. But whatever they believe, they ain't saying. And that's what I mean. Man, it's just the politics of racism isn't about black versus white. You know, that would make it so much easier. It's the politics of racism as it influences an entire country. So you can send $40 billion to Ukraine. But believe me, that's a political move. That's not a humanitarian thing. You know, that's its own politics of racism. You know, and while we're on it, in the 60s, you know, there were two chants above all others. It was America, love it or leave it. And in the next breath, it was better dead than red. You know, and it didn't matter what party was in power. That was the prevailing attitude of American society that was addressed, that was directly pointed toward, you know, with this racist innuendo, it was directly pointed to everything that wasn't white and male in America. You know, so this these themes, you know, the politics of racism, man, back. Anyway, I'm sorry, y'all, I'm tripping. You know, it's so much more than just, it is gas and all that, but it's so much more than that, too. I mean, you have to, you know, consider Saudi Arabia and their attitudes toward women, you know, and this country. Anyway, man, we're never going to be able globally to get away from, you know, the politics of racism one way or the other. You know, when Trump was in power and this whole thing about COVID, how racist that became, you know, man, you know, especially toward China. Yeah. So, you know.
Still is.
So
what was
so
your,
what are your
what was your what was your second what was your second question or comment, Adam?
And I won't answer. I won't respond. Go ahead.
Oh yes, you absolutely will, because this is going to spark you. What are your thoughts on, you know, how they talk about gun policy and the left is on one side, the right's on the other side, and the same with voting laws. The right's on one side, left's on the other side. Why not make the same laws for voting and or being able to purchase a gun? Why don't they make those laws the exact same? So if you want everybody that votes to have an ID, to have a background check and do all that, why not make that the exact same to be able to purchase a gun?
Because it's political. No.
No, you just said it, man. That's it. Yeah, we can expand on that if you want. But there it is, you know. And if you want to, man, you remember that show we did a while back and you talked about that train that was parked right outside of the Inglewood community on the south side of Chicago? And what was that train car loaded with?
The military stuff.
The guns.
Oh, when they were breaking into Inglewood, into the trains and stealing the ammunition and the guns. And everybody's like, well, how are they getting the guns in Chicago? How are they doing that? And it's kind
of... Well, my point is that they parked the whole train in Inglewood, you know, and that train was loaded with guns. You know, I mean, you know, the fact that you could even do that and people knew where to go to get it, you know, I mean, it's, again, you know, it's this... Jesus Christ, yeah. Why can't government say no more, you know, assault rifles, period? What's all right about that? Well,
why does one Democrat say, okay, you want gun laws?
Even, It's not even about, see, that's the, man, forget parties.
Okay.
You know, forget parties. Throw that out the window. You know, we're talking about politics. Forget parties. We're talking about the politics of racism. You know, I mean, take a look at what's going on. Look, we talked about it Monday. You know, we talked about the fact that the police can come and disarm a dude who just killed 10 people and not take him out, talk him down, and take him away. That's because they've been trained to do that. You know, they ain't been trained not to shoot a brother running away from them, but bare-ass naked. You know?
Yeah.
It's the politics of racism. You know, so guns, that's the political economy there. You know how much money people make off of guns?
And look at the history of guns itself. I mean, guns is
in this country. Yeah,
it's almost American, you know. Even though guns,
it is American.
It's the wild west. Doing my best, you know. But guns is just as much
my right to vote as it is to own a gun. So why shouldn't the laws that govern both of those be the same?
Well, wait a minute now. Your right to vote is being tampered with. That ain't a done deal. You know, your right to vote has been tampered with for the past 100 years, 160 years, really. You know, the right to vote has never been realized for people of color in America. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, white women in 1929, but, you know, the vote is not a done deal. That's something that black folks are still fighting for. You know, so you can't get away from the politics of racism in any element of politics in this country. You will find the themes of racism in some form, you know, dictating the policies that are being written. And my issue is you got people of color, you know, like I made the great mistake of assuming of a hyena. I don't even want to call him a wolf. A hyena in black skin that I thought, you know, great. They're going to replace Thurgood Marshall with another brother.
Yep.
You know, that's what I was seeing without understanding the politics of racism. You know, so, okay, I said I wasn't going to say nothing. Here it is. I'm going to say 30. I apologize, y'all.
No, please. No, I love listening to you guys talk. Please.
Well, I mean, that's...
go ahead, Will.
No, I was going to say, I mean, like you said, simply, I think it is just the politics itself. And they dictate it. And it's just the history, if you will, even of America. I mean, follow the money, right? That's what they always say. Follow the money. Follow the money. Mm-hmm. And there ain't a lot of money in voting rights. You know, it helps to they can still dictate policy by changing voting rights. So, you know, why not keep flipping that around? So
you have a whole segment of American society that are convinced that the president of this country is a fraud. Out of all the elections that have ever taken place, because of the themes of racist attitudes that had never been checked and finally got a president in who gave it all the power it needed to express itself without fear of retribution. Now, they're gradually building up enough steam to where voting, sure, you can have that right. Go ahead, Adam, you can go vote. It ain't going to mean shit if it don't turn out the way we want it to, but feel free to think you're doing something. You know,
They've already shown they can still change it.
Yeah.
They can still change the results at the end, you know.
Yeah.
So-and-so has these votes, but he's got to have these other votes. So, no, he's the winner.
Man, the politics of racism in this country is becoming more and more flagrant. And I fear, you know, that the way this country's set up, unless it changes, the fiber of its construct like the Electoral College, you know, if that doesn't change, if filibuster doesn't change, but most importantly, if the Electoral College by design doesn't change, you know, it is absolutely no way to deter the wave of racist upheaval that has just taken over this country. Anytime you can have the same number of senators from North Dakota and South Dakota that you can have from California, they're in trouble.
I love your political breakdown of political racism, political science, political economics. I love that breakdown. Can you guys possibly like delve more into that at some point? It was really interesting. So I just appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. In future shows, we will. We ain't going to do it tonight.
No, we out of time. Not at all. I mean, you got 4 minutes left. You can't get into it?
What was I thinking? Yeah, we got just enough time to cover all 7 of them.
Adam, I think you said that for me because I got to have a try to squeeze it all in. Wait, we can do it. We can do it.
Yeah, man. We're going to talk more about it. But, Will, go ahead, man. You got 4 minutes. Adam, Primo, great hearing you. Artie, thanks so much for jumping into the mix. Really great to hear
you
guys, name again, Artie.
Are you guys doing another one on Saturday?
No, that's on hold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we decided to hold up on that. So you just stuck with us twice a week.
Damn. Yeah. All right, that's fine.
Give y'all a break. For right now, anyway. But we're going to keep working on it.
All right, Will. All right, Adam. All right, Artie. And all right, the rest of you millions of folks out there.
The millions!
All right, man. But I ended the airplane, young brother.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another episode of the Gray House Effects Radio Show. Again, we are live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Shows are saved and archived. In case you missed anything, you can always go back and listen to our previous shows. Here on the Gray House Effects Radio Show, we try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking. Experience a renewed self-awareness and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm Will. That's Bill over there. Dad, as always, it's a great time doing this with you.
Amen.
I love you.
Amen.
And I'll holler at you soon. Everybody else, be
absolutely
safe. Everybody else, be safe, be blessed. And most importantly, be yourself. Because everybody else is taken. Have a good night, ladies and gentlemen. Amen.
To all the crazy things that happened, that made me who I am.